Covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
That's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution Radio!
Funeral. It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. Together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
Yeah.
You are live.
This is Jim Fetzer, your host on the Raw Deal today, where I am very pleased to have as a recurrent engagement Jack Mullen, whose last appearance was one of the most warmly received in the history of the program. So I'm extremely pleased to have him here with me today. We are going to begin with updates of his past views and experience and the latest he has to share with us. Jack, please lay it on. Everyone wants to hear whether your views are just as grim and sober and apprehensive as they were a few weeks ago.
Well, no, because I'm seeing a lot more people waking up. And I mean, as far as the internet's concerned, I think the people on the internet have finally figured this thing out. There's just so many instances of things like, you know, Fauci running away and we can't find him for 2 weeks or whatever that is, that have just started to get people thinking a little bit more about what could be going on here. But I also see local people, you know, I was in a store today and I had to wear a mask because it was in Maryland, and I was just holding a piece of cloth in my face. And I said to the girl behind the counter, do you enjoy wearing this mask? And she said, no. And I said, well, that's why I'm just faking wearing one. And she said, well, we're all faking one. Faking wearing one. And I said, you realize it's a hoax? And she said, yeah, I realize it's a hoax.
Oh, that's so wonderful, yeah. Jack. God, I am ecstatic to hear this. Keep it up. Lay it on. Keep going.
And then I was in another convenience store 2 days ago, and there was a girl wearing a mask. And I made a flyer that I've been handing out to people. And I have it here somewhere. We'll talk about it later. But it helps them understand that masks, for example, are useless against the coronavirus, if there is such a thing. And second of all, they're dangerous to your health because, you know, they prevent oxygen flow primarily. But Dr. Blaylock listed a number of things that are dangerous about masks. And the biggest one, though, is hypoxia. And she said, no, I don't like wearing this mask. It's giving me a headache. And I said, but that's hypoxia, because Blaylock said, you know, that there's just more and more people getting headaches from these things. But, I mean, it also traps your own toxins inside. Well,
it's killing your brain cells, for crying out loud. I predict the average IQ of Americans will drop 5 points when all is said and done.
Well, I think that's probably the idea. Anyway, so that, you know, along those lines, you know, I'm seeing a lot of stuff that it is positive. But what's gruesome about it is that the mainstream media continues the charade that this is real. And states like Maryland and others are still escalating ridiculous ideas. I mean, if you listen to the standard idea for how kids should go back to school this fall, I mean, no one could do this stuff. You know, you can't have kids expected to stand 6 feet apart and wear masks and have lunchroom schedules that are screwy as can be, and you know, not be able to play in any shape or form as a group of touch for.
And children are virtually immune from COVID-19 anyway, Jack. The death incidence, I mean, for adults, it's approximately the same as a seasonal flu, but for children 0 to 17, it's extremely low. So all this idea of closing the schools was massive, colossal stupidity in the first place. And how are the kids ever going to make it up? Those are hours of classroom instruction they'll never receive, period, ever. They're gone forever.
Well, you know, there's probably something good about that. The American school system is nothing but indoctrination. It has been for a long time. They knew it in the 1950s. And it was, you know, the cultural Marxist idea to change the curriculum from one of critical thinking and self-thinking and thinking into being good citizens and good workers, as John D. Rockefeller said. So, you know, that may not be bad. It's kind of like the idea that the number of deaths this year, for example, compared to the last 4 years, total from January 1st through through May 1st, this year is below those on average. And for example, 2018 was 26% higher. So there's no evidence at all of any pandemic. There's no scientific basis that there is a coronavirus. There's no gold standard for a coronavirus. There's nothing you can test something in your cells against and say definitively, this is the particular one they're calling COVID-19. So as it turns out, this story is a complete fabrication. It is, as Trump calls it, the invisible enemy. It's the same as the story of the emperor's new clothes. There is no virus that you can wrap your hands around in any shape or form. It would appear that these are just people dying of normal causes, and then those causes being attributed to coronavirus. I mean, we've seen reports from everybody with gunshot wounds to death and to acute pneumonia coupled with kidney disease, all being called COVID-19. So we also noticed that the clustering of the deaths in this situation all tend to be around certain areas and not over the rest of the world. And so other nations have relatively gotten back more to a normal life than the United States, which is being hit the hardest. And we see the clustering includes the city of New York and the state of New York as the largest location for COVID-19. And we see Mayor Cuomo having the most radical authoritarian ideas about how they're going to stay at home and social distance, and they're beating people up in the streets of New York like asinine fools. And so it's interesting that the place where they pretend to be the hardest against it, they also have the highest rate. But it's not pretension. A mathematician out of London put together a nice little graphic And he indicated that the primary centers for this thing are all scheduled or scattered around the power centers of the world. And we would call them the global Zionist strongholds. So we have New York City and then New York State, and followed by the city of London and the UK, and then Belgium and Brussels. And then a little bit smaller in Canada, and then it begins to drop away. And he's got an interesting chart where he shows.
I've switched the hosting to you, Jack, so you can show us a chart.
Okay.
I mean, it'll be in the video version of the show, and we can talk about it with our audience.
Okay. And I'm not going to try to spend too much time, but this is available on YouTube. This guy's name is Andrew. Somebody, I can read it here.
At Andrew Peerless, at Peerless Reads. Andrew at peerlessreads.com. Andrew Mather. Andrew Mather, M-A-T-H-E-R, is his name.
Yeah, but he's got a YouTube channel where this stuff is, and it's called Peerless Reads. And if you look up peerlessreads.com, it's a clothing store. So it's interesting. But nonetheless, he shows basically the clustering, which we can see here is – there's a little bit in China.
You can go full screen. You can go full screen, Jack, if you want.
If I know how to do it here, I don't use this program very much.
Okay, just go ahead.
Okay. Actually, I'm going to use this program when I'm on with you, so I really need to. all right. Well, I'll worry about it in a minute, but next time you're talking. So anyway, you can see here that we've got clustering in a little bit in China, and then the UK, the EU, and then this big circle over New York and New York City. And then to use his numbers, he computes the numbers based on, I believe, the total number of deaths that would normally be on a given day on the average in the in New York City, for example. And then he's saying that the number of deaths are actually 86 times that. It's like 86 days, 42 hours of normal deaths. And don't hold me to that, because when I heard him read it, I was having trouble understanding his accent. It doesn't matter for this discussion. We can see, based on what he said here, that we've got New York City with a number of 180. And we've got the rest of the world with numbers that can't be seen on the chart. We've got the UK with a number slightly less than 40, the USA overall with a number around 18, the state of New York at 80, and Belgium at a little less than 60. So his point is that this is not feasible, and it's impossible. In fact, he computes the odds. He says the chance that the state of New York's figures represent the COVID-19 virus are 1 in 500 million, and the odds of the city of New York representing the figures representing the virus are 1 in 32 million billion billion.
This is a pretty small number. But what he's basically, and he refers to this as an unusually political virus. So, I mean, what he's doing, Jack, is exposing the whole pandemic as a complete sham, a complete
Absolutely.
And total sham.
And is exactly what he's doing. And in fact, he speaks at length on the fact that it's a political pandemic, has nothing to do with reality. And as these wonderful new revelations in medicine come out from people like Dr. Andrew Kaufman and this new book called What Really Makes You Ill by Don Lester and David Parker, it becomes evident that there's likely no theory at all that supports the idea of transmittable viruses, and never has been. It's always been environmental issues that cause disease, say, for example, like polio caused by DDT and other toxins. And then these things are then misrepresented as being something that are caused by an internal germ. And then the manufacturers of vaccines seizing upon that as a way in which they can extract some chemicals from your cells that are being produced while you're sick. And that those chemicals are now thought to be actually the cleaning process. They call exosomes and not viruses. And as a result, they give you the disease when they inoculate you. And so vaccination is one of the things that I like to talk most about in this particular.
Jack, that's a wonderful point, because it turns out that the Gates polio vaccine is the best way to get polio. The Gates N1R1 vaccine is the best way to get brain damage. They use this anti-rare sexually transmitted disease in Africa and caused massive problems. The vaccines are the problem. We know there's a stunning correlation. I mean, it's a perfect correlation between the increased use of these vaccines and the autism among Americans. Let me see if I can share, Jack. If I'm back as host, maybe you have to give me back host.
I do. Just hang on a second. It's coming. And now you're the host.
Okay, let me see. I can pull up. I can pull up some slides, too, that are pretty damn interesting. Here's one. New York Post had an article right on the front page. The Big Apple is dying. Its streets are empty. Tens of thousands have been plunged into poverty. Our leaders have no plans, no answers. New Yorkers have already learned to socially distance. Businesses can adjust. The elderly and infirm can continue to be isolated. It needs to end now. He's got it 100% right. And look at this, Jack. From Minnesota, for example, the Department of Health statistics show that there's a cluster from the age of 60 to 90 is the greatest range of death. But guess what? The average life expectancy in the United States is 78.54. What did we think? People just stopped dying? It looks to me like they're dying at a normal rate, but now it's being attributed to coronavirus when that had nothing to do with it. Here's a point I made earlier on the show that, you know, you can have all these deaths and it have nothing to do with it. It's got to do with introducing irrelevant, causally irrelevant factors. We have a hippie in Times Square moaning why he was asked to keep the wild tigers away. But there are no wild tigers here. Yep, see what a great job I'm doing? Here's another. This cube of sugar dissolved in water because it has had a dissolving spell cast on it. But would it dissolved in water spell or not? John Jones took birth control pills and did not become pregnant. But John was a man, and men do not become pregnant with or without taking birth control pills. Most COVID-19 patients who died were between the ages of 70 and 90. But the average life expectancy is 78.57. So most of those between the ages of 70 and 90 would have a minimal life expectancy in any case with or without COVID-19. Jack, this reinforces the points you were making. I have other slides I'll return to, but I think that you've got this guy, Andrew, making a peerless argument that the whole thing is a fraud. It's a total fraud from beginning to end.
Yeah, and it also it brings out some other interesting points. And one of them is that the regular flu rate, the normal flu rate that they're counting as flu and not coronavirus, and that's because people aren't dying of it. That hasn't changed in this year compared to last year compared to the previous 2 years. And so that's another strong support of the argument that these diseases are not communicable. I mean, the flu is thought to be now by this non-germ theory group as just a natural functioning of the human body when it has toxins and cellular damage. And those toxins come from the environment. And those and our environment is terribly toxic. I mean, the food is all poisoned. The water is filled with things like fluoride. The air has who knows what in it from those trails that we see above us every single day. Our medicines are absolute toxins. And this is an interesting point. The number of deaths this year to date are lower than last year and the year before. And one of the reasons, and I've mentioned it before last time, is that the healthcare system is the number three killer in the United States. And that's only using very limited definitions of how people die. For example, 120,000 people a year die by taking prescription drugs normally. That means they don't, you know, overdose or anything. They just swallow them away and they die.
You're talking about the overall death rate across the United States. The number of deaths across the United States is lower this year than it was last, which was lower than the year before.
Exactly. And so what I'm saying then is that having people stay home has decreased the death rate, not because they're avoiding coronavirus, but because they're not using the medical system. And the medical system is an absolute, total, massive killer. And so You know, I recently got a chance to speak with Dr. Brzezinski down in Houston, Texas, in person because I was there for a meeting and he hosted it. And he was talking to me. I mean, I don't know how many people know about Brzezinski, but he's somebody to look up. He is a genius and a great man himself. But he has a cancer center there where he figured out how to cure cancer, all cancers now. But at that time, in 1975, he started working on it. And by 1979, he had determined how to cure most cancers. And he was promised money by the Nixon administration, which that money came through for one initial grant, if I remember the story correctly. And then no more money was forthcoming after he was able to do so. The interesting thing is that over the past whatever number of years that's been, 40 years, 50 years, he's fought endless battles with everybody from the DEA to the state, to the federal government's FDA, a variety of different other health services, just to keep his clinic open. He's had his rooms raided. He has his lab equipment destroyed. He was never able to find a company that he trusted to create his medicines, so he had to start his own pharmaceutical company. But what he told me is mind-boggling, because his invention and his treatment of cancers, and he said this also extends to Parkinson's disease and other neurological disorders, are based on the idea that these are not caused by germs, but they're in fact a genetic disorder that is caused by the environment. And so what he has developed is a means to repair the DNA of the cells that are involved without harming other cells. And at the same time, by eradicating the cancer completely, whereas most of the junk that's sold to you by the medical system of today, which has a 5% cure rate of chemotherapy, only destroys the existing cells and all the other cells around them. And if you survive that, which most don't, 95% don't, then you can say that, you know, you were cured for cancer for a short period of time, and you may even call it remission. But anyway, the big thing that he told me in the blockbuster is that he can cure stage 4 lung cancer. You can get to him. The only way he can treat cancer now, real quickly summarize this, is if you've been declared by the state of Texas as having terminal cancer with no possibility of surviving. And they do that at a certain point. They say you're done. And there's a law in Texas that he was able to get passed called the Right to Try Law. And in that law, it says that if you've been declared off the books, that regular medical people can't harm you anymore, then he can try. And he tries, and he wins every time, except when they come to him already dead. Like, he's hit. Sadly, people show up on they've been held off and held off and held off. And by the time he sees them, they're beyond repair.
He's not the master of resurrection.
No. And so, but what he said was he can cure these things for next to nothing. I mean, like, you don't use the hospital system. You go home. He makes an individual treatment, and he creates the medicine specifically for you based on what he finds. And then he sends you home either with an IV apparatus or just pills. And so the hospital's out of the game. And can you imagine the amount of money that is wasted and destroyed into thin air by hospitals trying to treat cancer that they're planning to use to kill you with anyway?
I mean, Jack, there's the outside chance that this complete scam by the medical community, where you notice experts throughout the nation, with rare exceptions like Judy Mikovits and a few others, Kaufman, the two physicians from Bakersfield, have remained silent. They ought to be protesting outright every single day in every community across the United States. It hasn't happened. And that's undoubtedly because they're under the thumb of Big Pharma. This might lead to some kind of revolution. This is why I have thought Bernie Sanders would be the perfect Democratic candidate for this situation. Even if you don't believe in Medicare for All, I believe a huge percentage of Americans, after going through this absurd experience, would be very enthusiastic about looking at alternatives to our standard medical procedure, which, as you and the doctor are outlining, is bizarre and incompetent, and deliberately so, Jack. They don't want to cure cancer, even if the cure is at hand, because it cuts into their profit margin. That's why they haven't wanted hydroxychloroquine, which is 100% cure against this alleged virus, because it's cheap and easily available and doesn't make them a lot of money.
Exactly. And, you know, to quote Robert F. Kennedy with respect to viruses,
Junior, Yeah.
You're more apt to contract a disease from a vaccinated person than one who's not vaccinated. Vaccines kill more people than diseases do. Vaccines are insanely profitable to the companies that make them.
Yeah.
And it's peanuts compared to the profit from the selling of drugs and devices to treat illnesses that are caused by the vaccine. What a system, what a scam. And then you look at this idea that you can take an untested experimental DNA-based concoction of RFID and other nanotechnology garbage and insert it into the people and believe that you're not going to kill at minimum maybe 1%, but more likely you're going to kill 5 or 10% of the people right off the bat and have no zero liability for it at all.
I know. It's incredible. Well, Jack, look at the genius of this thing, as it appears that the very techniques are inducing us to use to combat the coronavirus are going to make us sick and promote it. Wearing a face mask, as you've already discussed, and Dr. Blaylock, and it's on my blog at jamesfetzer.org. He goes through a dozen reasons why wearing a mask is bad for you. Well, I've just now published a new article, Jeffrey Tucker, the 2006 origins of the lockdown idea. Let me read parts of it. Now begins the grand effort on display in thousands of articles and news broadcasts daily, somehow to normalize the lockdown and all its destruction of the last 2 months. We didn't lock down almost the entire country in 1968-69, 1957, 1949-52, or even during 1918. But in a terrifying few days in March 2020, it happened to all of us, causing an avalanche of social, cultural, and economic destruction that will ring through the ages. There was nothing normal about it. We'll be trying to figure out what happened to us for decades hence. How did a temporary plan to preserve hospital capacity turn into a 2 to 3 months of near-universal house arrest that ended up causing worker furloughs at 256 hospitals? A stoppage of international travel, a 40% job loss among people earning less than $40,000 a year, devastation of every economic sector, mass confusion and demoralization, a complete ignoring of all fundamental rights and liberties, not to mention the mass confiscation of private property with forced closures of millions of businesses. Ayersfield Magnus got to work to find the literature regarding the 2006 paper by Robert and Sarah Glass and discovered the following manifesto. Disease mitigation measures in the control of pandemic influenza. The authors include D.A. Henderson, along with three professors from Johns Hopkins infectious disease specialist Thomas Inglesby, epidemiologist Jennifer Nuzzo, and physician Tara O'Toole. The paper is a remarkably readable refutation of the entire lockdown model. I'll read from the paper. There are no historical observations or scientific studies that support the confinement by quarantine of groups of possibly infected people for extended periods in order to slow the spread of influenza. It is difficult to identify circumstances in the past half century when large-scale quarantine has been effectively used in the control of any disease. The negative consequences of large-scale quarantine are so extreme, forced confinement of sick people with the well, complete restriction of movement of large population, difficulty getting critical supplies, medicines, and food to people inside the quarantine area, that this mitigation measure should be eliminated from serious consideration. Home quarantine also raises ethical questions. Implementation of home quarantine could result in healthy, uninfected people being placed at the risk of infection from sick household members. Practices to reduce the chance of transmission, hand washing, maintaining a distance of 3 feet from infected people, etc., could be recommended. But a policy imposing home quarantine would preclude, for example, sending healthy children to stay with relatives when a family member becomes ill. Such a policy would also be particularly hard on and dangerous to people living in close quarters where the risk of infection would be heightened. Schools are often closed for 1 to 2 weeks early in the development of seasonal community outbreaks of influenza, primarily because of high absentee rates, especially in elementary schools, and because of illness among teachers. This would seem reasonable on practical grounds. However, to close schools for longer periods is not only impractical, but carries a possibility of serious adverse outcome. Thus, canceling or postponing large meetings would not be likely to have any significant effect on the development of the epidemic. While local concerns may result in the closure of particular events for logical reasons, a policy directing community-wide closure of public events seems inadvisable. Quarantine, as experience shows, there is no basis for recommending quarantine either of groups or individuals. The problem in implementing such measures are formidable, and secondary effects of absenteeism and community disruption, as well as possible adverse consequences, such as loss of public trust in government and stigmatization of quarantined people and groups, are likely to be considerable. Finally, there are remarkable conclusions. Experience has shown that communities faced with epidemics or other adverse events respond best and with the least anxiety when the normal social functioning of the community is least disrupted. Strong political and public health leadership to provide reassurance and to ensure that needed medical care services are provided are critical elements. If either is seen to be less than optimal, a manageable epidemic could move toward catastrophe. And here the author observes, confronting a manageable epidemic and turning it into a catastrophe. That seems like a good description of everything that's happened in the COVID-19 crisis of 2020. I'm saying, Jack, everything we were told to do by the Angie Fossies and the Bill Gates of the world were wrong. And were actually intended to create a pandemic where one did not and would not have existed otherwise.
Exactly.
Wearing the face mask is bad for you. It can lead to the accumulation of viruses, make you sick if you wouldn't have been sick otherwise, as well as, of course, the brain damage we've mentioned before. Social distancing has no effect. We got an Israeli virologist who points out the virus has a 70-day, it goes 40 days peak, 30 days it's gone. Social distancing doesn't make any difference. And the lockdown, as we've just been hearing, is catastrophic. And now that the death to the economy, Jack, that's going to have real repercussions. You got an increase in despair, deaths from despair. People are committing suicide. We're going to have more deaths from suicide by people who can't put food on the table or keep a roof over their head than die from the coronavirus. And we have all the social disruption, all the educational interruptions, all kinds of activities that are important in the lives of young people, especially. We just had here in Wisconsin, in Madison, the cancellation of the annual all-city swim meet. Well, I have a grandson who's a terrific swimmer and who's been preparing for it, but now he won't have the opportunity to do his thing. And they're even canceling world-class events like Olympics over this. I mean, it's complete bullshit, Jack. And the Faucis and the Gates of the world should be strung up on account. Let's give the guilty bastards a fair trial before we take them out and hang them.
There are so many people got to go down with this mess. There's so many. I mean, that whole coronavirus team that Trump surrounded himself with is former Gates employees or people that have received funding from Gates. And you know, I wanted to get back to some of the earlier things you said, but you're right. I mean, look at nobody got to graduate this year from any of the universities or their high schools or elementary schools. They're closed.
Yeah, these are once in a lifetime events, Jack. Once in a lifetime events. They'll never have the joy, the privilege, the opportunity to remember in a fond way and appreciate. I mean, this is destructive to the lives of every American living in the United States, with the exception of the rich and powerful who engineered this whole mock scenario.
And it is exemplary of the fact that these people are cold-hearted psychopaths. And I'm going to have a little statement I want to read about that in a few minutes. But there's no evidence of a pandemic. All right. So if you're going to have a pandemic, you're going to have deaths. You're going to look at that nonsense that Neil Ferguson spewed out, and that's what you're going to see. Now, what this whole pandemic is based on is the idea that was promoted in the movie Contagion. And that movie was written by somebody that has another astounding background, a guy named Larry Brilliant. And if you check out his background, you see he's a CIA asset of some sort that has been hanging out and causing trouble and walking around the planet with probably espionage and drug selling as his official occupation. But this movie is what we're living through right now. I watched it again the other night, and it's filled with this melodramatic drama, the same crap we hear on mainstream media every night, the same lies about how viruses work and spread, and the exponential rates, you know, their exponential curves. And so they even use the word social distancing in the movie. They have Lawrence Fishburne play one of the doctors, and he's talking about, you know, oh my God, we need to institute social distancing. So they already had that term ready to roll out. And
this is conditioning. It's like predictive programming. They're trying to plant the idea that that's an appropriate thing to do in the minds of the gullible.
Exactly. And
that's 95% of all Americans.
With that movie and the many others, there was well, it doesn't matter. I don't want to think about their names right now. Many movies on the same theme, and even zombie movies and The Walking Dead. And so what we got here is we have training of crisis actors, American crisis actors. And so now everybody knows how to wear a mask. They've seen it in the news. They've watched the Chinese do it over the last half a decade. They've seen it movie after movie. They know how to walk away from each other. I mean, people won't even – if I'm standing, I walk down the street, I laughed at a girl today. I'm walking down and I'm getting closer and closer to her. I could see her taking baby steps away, you know, so she can get her 6 foot away from me. I'm thinking, you realize that 6 foot comes from the fact that the average coffin is 6 foot in size. And so we're going to be all dead zombies in the idea of this master creator here. We got everybody as though they're in their own coffin already. And so there's no evidence of a pandemic. You would have to have people dying all over the place, like in that movie. Now, if you watch Contagion, you'll see they had millions of people dying, and they had riots and food shortages and all this stuff happening right in real time as the virus took hold. But none of that's happening here. In fact, we have lower death overall than we've had in the past 4 years. So there's no pandemic, no evidence of a virus whatsoever. And then these psychopaths remove your life from you so you can't go back to your own work. 50 million people now have applied for unemployment in the last 2 months. More than 100,000 businesses have failed or gone bankrupt that will not come back to life. They're saying that at least 42% of all lost jobs are going to be permanent because there's no place to go back to when they go back. And at the same time, the government's rate of printing money is astronomical. This currency is in its final days. The Austrian economics people call it crack a boom. It's the point where the interest payments become so steep, they begin to rise exponentially. And at that point, in order to maintain a system, if that's your goal, you have to dump unbelievably large sums of money in it every day. And those numbers get bigger by the week. And so the federal government is printing money like there's no tomorrow. I mean, they're saying already the deficit at $30 trillion, but that doesn't include all the off the books money that has to go into this system to permit it to go another day. And as I said before, the evidence that it was failing began last September with the bailouts of the repo windows. So we have a scam of unbelievable proportions. And one of the things that we don't give enough credit to in condemning is the unbelievable effect of the media in this particular case. I mean, all mainstream media, and I'm talking about every main, you know, I'm talking about TV, newspaper, radio, all the print stuff, and the internet mainstream media have committed acts of terrorism and deceit, and they are committing these acts against the citizens of the United States, Australia, Canada, the rest of the world. And I call it brutal terrorism. And it's broadcast by this media to the world, which had already been suffering from a background of terrorists, and not by organic reality-based acts of individuals, but rather the deliberate and coordinated acts of the globalist terrorist organizations doing these fake school shootings and the terror theater and the airports with the TSA and escalation of fake and controlled shootings in schools, terrorizing the children. And these things are, they're malicious and they are something that could only be done by something enormously evil. And what I want to bring up right now is that these people that control these mainstream media also control the banking system, the finance system, the medical system, the education system, and they control the government and its military. Everything that our civilization is founded on, the concrete of belief that we have, that our civilization is founded on agencies and controlling systems that are based on good, are upside down. It's the total inversion of perceived reality. It is all evil. It's difficult to comprehend, but up is down, caring is killing, good is bad, medicine is poison, obedience is slavery. And if you can wake up and just glimpse a bit of this, you'll see that it is done through the loving eyes of a concealed serial killer. The narrative of the coronavirus lockdown hoax with social distancing, which is prison isolation and pretentious concerns for people that might contract this invisible enemy, are the same people that are now telling mothers, and I wanted to bring this up earlier, they've changed their story, that this phantom menace can affect children too, that there are two types of results. If you can glimpse that this enemy of mankind is now reaching out to try to scare the children, then you'll know that this is a loving and caring, pure, malignant evil. And it intends to cannibalize and then decimate the U.S. economy, owning it all, and potentially forcing millions into bankruptcy and then starvation. While they sternly tell us, like that clown Cuomo, that opening your business is a crime. Getting sunlight is a violation. Shaking your friend's hand is contamination. So I would submit then that we are under the mind control of ghouls, Satanists, and masochists. And if we cannot shortly soon wake up, throw off these chains, we will be forced to accept their terms if people are too weak to deal with the fact that they have no food, that they don't have the conveniences of the things they used to have. They don't have a life like they had. They're going to have children in their hands that they can't take care of. And they're going to bring on this mess they call vaccine, and they're going to try to give two doses of this garbage. Not to mention that two doses is going to be 650 million doses times the number of dollars that people like Bill Gates received from this, which he was on one of the mainstream newscasts telling them that he gets a 20-time return on investment with vaccines. And then you got Dershowitz, who's telling us there's no constitutional protection for vaccines.
This infuriated me, Jack. This is despicable. That's my new name, Despicable Dershowitz. Alan Despicable Dershowitz. It's outrageous. He has to know better. There's a huge amount of literature on this. It goes back to the Nuremberg Code, which precludes medical experimentation on human beings without informed consent. Let me give you a couple of sources. Here's a BJMP.org, British Journal of Medical Practitioners, what they say, legal framework. A medical intervention without valid informed consent is a criminal offense, and the physician can be charged with battery. Examples of such situations include treatment against a patient's will, different treatment than the one consented for, and treatment after consenting deliberately with wrong or false information. Guidance for consent has been set by the regulatory body. While no one can consent for a competent adult, UK laws are regulating consent for minors, patients with acutely or permanently incapacity, and patients suffering from severe mental illness. Minors. At the age of 16, and this is in the UK now, persons are to be considered as adults and therefore be presumed to have capacity. Children younger than 16 may have capacity depending on their understanding. When a competent child refuses treatment, persons with parental responsibility may authorize this, or a court may overrule the child's decision. Incompetent children will be treated with consent from a person with parental responsibility. Now get this. You go online about informed consent from a legal dictionary. Informed consent is the act of agreeing to allow something to happen or to do something with a full understanding of all the relevant facts, including risk and available alternatives. That full knowledge and understanding is the necessary factor in whether an individual can give informed consent. This type of consent applies to many situations in life, including making decisions about medical care and legal issues, as well as entering into contracts. To explore this concept, consider the following definition of informed consent. Consent given only after having been informed of the facts, benefits, risks, and alternatives by truthful information. So Alan Dershowitz said nothing about informed consent. You'd have thought, as far as this guy's concerned, that the Nuremberg tribunals were never held. The Nuremberg Code never realized. What is informed consent? The law recognized a person can only legally consent to something, whether that's to allow something to occur or to perform some act that the person been informed of and understands the facts of the situation. It is only with a full comprehension of the risks and benefits, as well as an understanding of the possible alternatives, that any individual can consider what an action would be in his best interest. The obtaining of informed consent is especially important in the medical field, as failing to receive such approval leaves medical professionals liable for injuries that may occur. Informed consent is also vital when entering into a contract, as if one party is not fully informed, or if all information has not been disclosed, that uninformed party may be able to back out of the contract. Well, here are some of the points of the Nuremberg Code about permissible medical experiments. And this is universal. This is world law, international law. The voluntary consent of the human subject is absolutely essential. So if you or I refuse to have a vaccine, Jack, it cannot be applied. It's a violation of international law. But Alan Dershowitz didn't say anything about that. I mean, this guy turns out to be a bastard.
Have you seen his history? I mean, if you look at where he's been and come from, I mean, he's a friend and defender of Jeffrey Epstein. He attempted to get the laws of sexual consent, the ages lowered. He defended Jonathan Pollard.
Pollard.
Yeah, Pollard.
The Israeli spy.
Israeli spy, the greatest theft of intelligence information, in probably the history of the United States. And but if you just pay attention to his personal life, I mean, he's a mess. He also cited the constitutional case of 1903, I think, Jacobson versus Massachusetts, where the Supreme Court decided that even though they had brought this was about vaccination, the state of Massachusetts attempting to force vaccinate their people, the case itself brought medical experts in who said that vaccines were extremely dangerous and could never be shown to work. The dissenting or the opinion of the court was that it didn't matter whether they worked or not. They said it was only a matter of whether the states believed that it was in their interest and the interest of the people, citing that section in the Constitution of the general welfare, which is awful. Well, that they could do so.
Well, if Gates' polio vaccine induces polio and paralysis, if other of his anti-flu vaccines cause brain damage, if yet other of these vaccines cause death, how can they possibly be in the best interest of the people who receive them? Dershowitz has betrayed every principle for which anyone might have thought he stood in the past. He has shattered every thread of credibility. He is a completely contemptible person. I damn him to hell, Jack. This guy is a traitor to the United States, a traitor to the Constitution, a traitor to international law, a traitor to morality. Let me mention a few. Go ahead.
And he's just an Israel first. I mean, this is about Zionism's point of view, and from the point of view of the Zionists, they want us all vaccinated. And I saw an interesting video today. Maybe you saw it too. A woman that was talking in 2009 as from the position of, some high position in the CDC. Her name was Carol Baker. And she said that what needs to be done, because she was saying that the greatest number of people who oppose vaccinations are white people, that white people need to be killed, basically eliminated. And she said, we'll just get rid of all the whites in the United States. And
Jack, we got to return to that. It's so stunning. It's so awful. It's so absolutely unbelievable. We have to dwell on it before we get there. Let me add a few more points of the Nuremberg Code.
Go ahead.
The experiment should be such as to yield fruitful results for the good of society, unprocurable by other methods or by means of study, and not random and unnecessary in nature. Clearly, all these vaccines for COVID-19 are totally unnecessary in nature. The experiment should be so designed and based on the results of animal experimentation and a knowledge of the natural history of the disease or other problem under study, that the anticipated results will justify the performance of the experiment. Absolutely not. The experiment should be so conducted as to avoid all unnecessary physical and mental suffering and injury. No experiment should be conducted where there's an a priori reason to believe that death or disabling injury will occur, except perhaps in those experiments where the experimental physicians also serve as subject. But look at that. You got 500,000 girls in India who are paralyzed by Gates' polio vaccine. You got brain damage by his flu vaccine. You got this a stunning correlation of the inducement of autism by the mercury-based and aluminum-based vaccines. I mean, there's all kinds of good reasons, and Bobby Kennedy Jr. has been masterful in documenting them, Jack. Why no vaccine can be trusted. Any vaccine should be assumed to actually induce the consequence it's supposed to protect. You were an example, Jack. The flu vaccine led to you getting the flu, and since you abandoned the flu vaccine, you haven't had the flu. Let me just mention for all of our listeners there, we got off to a rocky start because Mitchell is missing in action. I hope he's okay. Mitchell missing in action. I was able to get the ad hoc assistance of another producer to get us on the air. But Mitchell's not there. We can't field the calls. I don't even have a number for you to call. And therefore, we're going to, cope as best we can in any case. So I'm not going to, give out a number. Though there is one I suppose we could try. But I'm worried about my Skype losing the connection if I got a call. So I'd rather have Jack on for 2 hours and not take calls than to take calls and lose Jack and possibly end the show abruptly. The points you're making about this woman, though, Jack, are devastating. And by the way, look at this. One further note. I was looking around, for results here to present them today. Well, it turns out there's a very interesting article, Mengele's Birthmark, the Nuremberg Code in United States Courts, by George Yanis. I thought that would be highly relevant, so I sought it. Well, guess what? It's not available. From the NIH, National Institute of Health, Library of Medicine, they have made this unavailable. And they've added a note here, COVID-19 is an emerging, rapidly evolving situation. Well, why would they think if I'm going to see Mengele's Birthmark, the Nuremberg Code of the United States Court, that I'm after information about COVID-19? The fact is, they're suppressing it because they know it undermines their desire to forcibly vaccinate everyone in the whole effing world, Jack.
Absolutely. And that's going to be the line in the sand. When it comes down to it, that's where men, if there are any, are going to stand, and the rest of them are going to be sheep. And, the idea that Trump's going to bring the military out to do the vaccinating didn't sit very well with me. I mean, we have laws basically against the military operating in any fashion in the United States. In the worst case, we have National Guard, but we have always had militia to do that kind of work. And this woman, Carol J. Baker, I mean, it's just another right in your face.
Jack, you got to set it up so we can play it when we come back. Set it up so we can play it when we come back from the break. I assume that the break is automated and we're going to have it here within a minute or so. So if you can pull it up, we'll play it when we come back. Thank you.
Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Many years from now, would you be willing to trade all the days from this day to that for one chance, just one chance, to come back here and tell our enemies that they may take our lives, but they'll never take our freedom?
The future is uncertain. I know this. Death is inevitable. I know this. But one thing is certain. As free men, it is our right to live unencumbered and in peace. And those times are quickly drawing to an end. And in these times, peace is certainly an illusion. And as the chains grow tighter, our ability to slip those chains increase incrementally with every passing moment. Inaction is no longer an option. It's time to raise our voices like a cacophony of thunder and lightning and tell the masters no more. And this is Nighthawk, and I say, for myself, no more. Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, because the freedom is slipping away.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, you know, Jack, we got a little feedback there. Yeah. It's astonishing that you have these people speaking out about wiping out the white race. I mean, and the reason they look a lot like you and me. I mean, they don't look, they're not black, they're not brown. They are evidently Kazarians, Jack, or Israelis, or Jews. I mean, this is very, very disturbing. Why don't you play this? I think a lot of our audience wouldn't even believe it if they don't hear it for themselves.
Are you going to put it up or you want me to?
I wanted you to. Yeah. Okay. I got to give you the host right again. Yeah.
Yeah.
We're having a tricky time here.
It's not like this is a new idea, though. This destruction of the whites has been in the planning stages since way before World War I. And that's primarily one of the primary reasons for World War I and II and the takeover of Russia and destruction of white Russia. Anyway, whenever
I've made you the host, Jack, so you can do it.
Okay.
Now.
I need to stop talking and
No. Go right ahead. You're doing great.
All right, here we go. And if I
Carol Baker, and who the hell is she? She's appointed chair of the CDC Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices in 2009. If this is a woman who's got a role in the CDC, Jack, maybe that's why the CDC is betraying us. They want to wipe out all the white people. It's disgusting. Play it,
Jack. Well, you know, the CDC, according to Bobby Kennedy, is just a privately held corporation with invested in vaccine patents. And so, you know, having them make some decisions about vaccines is a conflict of interest beyond belief. But this whole thing is criminal to the core. Okay, I'm going to press the play button here and see what happens.
We're not getting the sound.
Yes, I don't know how to make it do that because I'm hearing it fine. Let's see. I see if there's anything that would tell me that it should be set different, but I don't know. I mean, I'm playing it. My audio is going to you through this headphone. Maybe if I remove
it. Oh, yeah. You got to take off your headphone. Try it again.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah.
The battle is being fought. One family, one physician, one health center. That's why we're doing as well as we are. We're talking about the minority and strategies against the minority. So I have the solution. Every study published in the last 5 years, when you look at vaccine refusers, I'm not talking about, well, hesitants, most of them we can talk into coming to terms, but refusers. We'll just get rid of all the whites in the United States because Houston is the most diverse city in the entire United States. There's 7 Asian languages spoken in that city. I've been a minority for more than 20 years in the city of Houston. The majority is, we call Hispanic. That is not a race or an ethnicity. That is a political designation. But a lot of them are from Central and South America, Mexico. Guess who wants to get vaccinated the most?
Not me.
Immigrants. Part of it.
That's what made Donald Trump's comment about bringing disease.
Right.
When they come here.
Immigrants.
Better vaccination rates in Mexico.
It is the well-educated in terms of the paper that they put on their wall. People that have been here a long time, and it's very unfortunate. But I think we need not lose the big picture.
Unbelievable.
Jack, look at all the white people who are sitting there when she was talking about extinguishing, getting rid of all the white people. I haven't heard a peep about this in the mainstream media. Not a peep. Not an effing word, Jack. This is as outrageous as it gets. I mean, give me a break. Play it again, Jack. Play it again.
I have seen many situations where they have their anti-white and the whites are standing up clapping. And that's why I know that there are two groups of people in this country that are European background. And one group is not going to be able to be compatible with the other. All right, here we go.
Battle is being fought. One family, one physician, one health care. That's why we're doing as well as we are. We're talking about the minority and strategies against the minority. So I have the solution. Every study published in the last 5 years, when you look at vaccine refusers, we're talking about, well, hesitants, most of them we can talk into coming to terms, but refusers. We'll just get rid of all the whites in the United States because Houston is the most diverse city in the entire United States. There's 7 Asian languages spoken in that city. I've been a minority for more than 20 years in the city of Houston. The majority is Hispanic. It's not a race or an ethnicity. That is a political designation. A lot of them are from Central and South America, Mexico. Guess who wants to get vaccinated the most? Immigrants. Part of it.
That's what made Donald Trump's comment about bringing disease.
Right.
When they come here.
Immigrants.
Have better vaccination rates in Mexico.
It is the well-educated, in terms of pieces of paper that they put on their wall, people that have been here a long time, and it's very unfortunate. But I think we need not lose the big picture.
Yeah, we get the big picture here, Jack. Yeah, stop the screen share. give me back the host. But let's talk about this. It's completely outrageous. Here's a woman who's in an advisory capacity to the CDC talking about getting rid of all the white people in America. Why? Because some of them are refusing to be vaccinated? When they know vaccines cause paralysis, they cause the flu, they cause brain damage, they call it autism. Gee, why would you want to oppose? Why wouldn't you want to take a vaccine that could cause brain damage? Why wouldn't you want to take a vaccine that could make your body paralyzed? Why wouldn't you want to take a vaccine that'll damage your brain? I mean, Jack, this is just insanity.
Well, and it's, I mean, I guess white people are the smart ones here. We know for a fact that, other cultures tend to be more authority worshiping. You know, look at the Chinese, for example, and that applies equally to other non-white cultures. And so they're functioning from the position of not fully informed. But the other interesting thing, you know, that she said is that that she'd been to Houston and lived in Houston. And that was when I came back from Houston, I could not stop talking about that for about a week. I had never been in an American city where I didn't see any white people. And I mean, I saw a lot of nice people, but I didn't see any white people. And
that's supposed to be the great virtue of Houston, is that it has very few white people.
Yeah, it has. You can't find any white people there. I mean, they say the population of whites there is 20%, but that must be where you are, because where I was, and the thing is, if she's saying that the immigrants weren't vaccinated in Houston, there aren't any. They're mostly immigrants. So anyway, I wanted to say one quick thing before you move back to your chart here, that if you look at the there was a bit of hidden film done at the ADL. I don't have the specifics, but I saw it in one of Adam Green's wonderful videos. And on the chart in the wall, they had a graph of the population of the United States in terms of number of whites versus number of non-whites. And they had shown it from 1960. And they had made marks on it each place, identifying the fall in the white population as a hooray point. And so, you know, it's not a secret that there's an attempt to eradicate white people. And white people deserve to live, and whites deserve to like their own race, and they deserve to have things that they created and built. I mean, this was a country built by white people, and it has been stolen little by little and inch by inch using fake morality and other types of weaponized language, and then a judicial system that's corrupt. Eventually, we've gone from a, you know, somewhere in the 90s percent white percent in the 1960s early to where we're basically, after the baby boomers fall off, we're no longer a majority at all. And at that time, how we're going to be treated and our political ability to have any control in this country is just going to be incredible. I mean, if you look and study, and I've spent a great deal of time reading about white South Africa, and when they became no longer in control of their civilization and were treated as a minority, their entire lives changed for the worse. And, you know, hundreds of thousands of them are homeless. And of the population of originally 4 million, there's some almost nearly a million living in tent cities now, and many of them in fear of their life every single day. And they get no political respect. They are disowned by their own nation. And so anyway, that's what's going on here. And I'll hand it back to you.
Yeah, Jack. Well, let me pick up with a article by Bobby Kennedy Jr., who is distinguishing himself in the family tradition. I'm very proud of everything he's doing. Here's an article from Bobby Jr. Gates' globalist vaccine agenda, a win-win for pharma and mandatory vaccination. Vaccines for Bill Gates are a strategic philanthropy that feeds his many vaccine-related businesses, including Microsoft's ambition to control a global vaccination ID enterprise and give him dictatorial control of global health policy. Yeah, see, that's where it ties in with a computer. He wants all this to be digitally tracked using his Microsoft software. promising his share of $450 million of $1.2 billion to eradicate polio, Gates took control of India's National Technical Advisory Group on Immigration, which mandated up to 50 doses of polio vaccines through overlapping immunization programs to children before the age of 5. Indian doctors blamed the Gates campaign for a devastating non-polio acute flaccid paralysis epidemic that paralyzed 490,000 children beyond expected rates between 2000 and 2017. In 2017, the Indian government dialed back Gates' vaccine regimen and asked Gates and his vaccine policies to leave India. Within the rate of this non-polio acute flaccid paralysis dropped precipitously. Meanwhile, the most frightening polio epidemics in Congo, Afghanistan, and the Philippines are all linked to vaccines, namely Gates vaccines. In 2017, the World Health Organization reluctantly admitted that the global explosion in polio is predominantly vaccine strain, meaning it was induced by the vaccines. The most frightening epidemics in Congo, Afghanistan, and the Philippines are all linked to vaccines. In fact, by 2018, 70% of global polio cases were vaccine strain. In 2009, the Gates Foundation funded tests of experimental HPV vaccines developed by GlaxoSmithKline and Merck on 23,000 young girls in remote Indian provinces. Approximately 1,200 suffered severe side effects, including autoimmune and fertility disorders. 7 died. Indian government investigations charged that Gates-funded researchers committed pervasive ethical violations, pressuring vulnerable village girls into the trial, bullying parents, forging consent forms, refusing medical care to the injured girls. The case is now in the country's Supreme Court. Meanwhile, South African newspapers complain we are guinea pigs for the drug makers. And here, Jack, you can see the correlation between the introduction of these mercury-contained vaccines. Thimerosal is the name for the ethyl mercury preservative in vaccines and the rise in autism prevalence. It's a perfect statistical correlation, Jack. Perfect. Mm-hmm. So let us reiterate. Risks of treatment that must be disclosed. When obtaining informed consent, doctors do not have to inform the patient of each and every risk, but must advise of the important risks. In most states, one or two is used to determine just what risks are required to be disclosed. One, would other doctors disclose that risk? If a medical case becomes a subject of a civil lawsuit, this issue would boil down to whether the undisclosed risk was statistically important enough to be disclosed and whether it is commonly disclosed by other doctors in similar circumstances. This question would be answered by expert witnesses for each party who are asked in court whether they would have personally informed a patient of the risk in question. How about paralysis from a polio vaccine, Jack? Do you think you ought to inform a patient of that risk or brain damage? Yeah. Damage from a flu vaccine, Jack? Any reason for that? I mean, it's incredible. Unless,
you know, everybody else is.
It turns out the Indian physician was so suspicious of the Gates vaccine that they had a test and it was loaded with sterility and anti-fertility ingredients because he's out to depopulate the world. Two,
right.
Would another reasonable patient have made a different decision if informed of that particular risk? This question could only be compared to a patient with the same medical condition and medical history as the plaintiff, asking whether he would have made a different choice regarding the treatment if he had been advised of that particular risk. Meanwhile, here's a nice cartoon. You got Bill Gates sitting speaking to Mark Zuckerberg, and Gates says to Zuckerberg, "You delete the posts and I'll delete the people." Jack, that's what it comes down to. I mean, it's disgusting beyond belief.
And then you see the connections between the mainstream media and vaccine companies. You know, like Merck, for example, I believe it's either Merck or Pfizer is the sponsor of Anderson Cooper's CNN show, and you see Google being owned by Alphabet, Alphabet owning vaccine companies, investing in vaccine companies, and then you realize why Google will not allow you to see anything negative about vaccines. I mean, if you try to write something as a search, you know, similar to "Are vaccines dangerous?", all you'll see is pages and pages of garbage about vaccine deniers and you know, people that are negative to vaccines and how they're causing a problem and how they damage the herd immunity, which is another fabricated bit of nonsense. I mean, once they realize that people had a pretty good argument when they said, go ahead and get yourself vaccinated and I'll stay out of it. And that wasn't good enough. So they had to come up for a reason, a way for you to say, listen, if I'm not vaccinated and you're vaccinated and something comes along and I get it, all you should do is smile and be happy that you got vaccinated. But what it turns out is that most of the time, people vaccinated are the ones that get the sickest. And if you look at the studies that have been done, there's been relatively few, but there have been a couple done that show that the children who have no or very few vaccines are the healthiest children over the course of their life. There have been studies done, I think, through maybe even their 30s. So without these poisons in your body was never designed to accept foreign DNA and other contaminants like mercury the adjuvants that we don't even know what they are. And then just a whole host of stuff. They found monkey DNA, but they found feces, you name it. That stuff goes in there. And sometimes they find contaminated vaccines that have something entirely different in it, like that batch of vaccines that was Baxter created back in the day of the H1N1 flu, where they actually said that it contained the H1N1 flu. So anyway, and you're at the hands of some magic. You know, it's another one of these things I always like to liken to the coronavirus now and the emperor's new clothes and the Chinese landing on the dark side of the moon. That is that you can't see this stuff. You have no idea what's in it. A man sitting there getting paid $400 or $500 per person to push this vaccine on you in a lab coat has no idea whatsoever what's inside that vacuole. He can be told it's this and that and the other without a clue. He has no ability to know. The nurses putting it in their arms, those little babies crying, have no idea. So we're basically being asked to put something that would used to be called a pig in a poke. And once you wake up to it, you realize there's no explanation on earth how this could happen, why this could happen, except for the fantastic money.
So how could a great constitutional attorney like Alan Dershowitz feed us such a line of bullshit as to say we have no constitutional right to refuse a vaccine when it requires informed consent? They're not granting informed consent. These are inherently dangerous. Your right to self-defense, Jack, would, in my opinion, entitle you to blow away anyone who came to forcibly vaccinate you in your home. Believe me, that is my position.
Yeah, well, Dershowitz is not a friend of America, and he's not a good man. And so that's why he's supporting another agenda for another group. And you're right. Your right to self-defense means that you can't have something jammed into your arm, which is what Dershowitz said in his video piece. He said, if you refuse to have a vaccine, you can be bound up and taken to the nearest hospital and have a needle jammed into your arm.
And I say, damn, Alan Dershowitz, I've never been so disgusted in my life as with this guy abusing his position. He was on the Harvard School of Law. He's been frequently cited all over the media, widely regarded as an authority on the Constitution. And he's giving us this kind of bullshit when the well-being of the nation is at stake. Damn you, Alan Dershowitz, rot in hell.
Absolutely. But he's pretending, he's telegraphing this, what is going to happen here.
That's not going to happen. We're gonna blow them away. If this, Jack, this is a bottom line issue. Believe me, I think a vast majority of Americans aren't going to put up with this shit.
Well, I agree. There's going to be a lot of people not. And that's part of the plan, too. It's all game. I was on the Power Hour radio show today, and I was talking about the fact that for the last 25 years or so, every American has been under study for the most part. You know, it's more in the last 10 years, but even back in the mid-90s, Google and the other surveillance systems, including Microsoft and its Windows operating system, have been watching and recording and keeping track of human behavior and studying behavior based on certain inputs. And even part of this coronavirus is going to be used for the next step of this thing. And that data then has been collected into what would now be supercomputers that are expecting to create artificial intelligence that outthinks us and is able to produce the kind of world that we've seen in movies where drones are dispatched because somebody went off the reservation, et cetera. But the interesting thing is that I think that most people live their whole life in a zombie state and they are asleep. They don't pay attention to themselves at all. They are rarely aware of the moment. They're lost in either their hands are around a phone. They're watching some crap on that mind control box. They're thinking to themselves, but they're not paying attention to the world. And I believe that it's possible for people to change everything very quickly simply by not being exactly like they have been. I mean, I believe that this AI monster has studied all of us, has some good idea how you're going to act, how I'm going to act. And I believe with just the ability to wake up, sit there for a moment and go, hey, this is my body. And I'm feeling this and I'm feeling that. And I'm thinking this at the same time. And I'm having runaway thoughts. And wow, I'm a little out of shape. I need to get in shape. We need to change ourselves quickly. And we need to be something that we're would be happy and proud of later in the future. And that is take charge of your life, become healthier, eat better, turn off the television, get rid of your computers, especially if they're running Microsoft and even Apple. There's other Linux boxes out there that have been designed for privacy, and get rid of your smartphone and replace it with a flip phone. And they still make flip phones. You can make subtle differences that just confound this artificially intelligent monster that's growing because it's not intelligent. It's artificially intelligent. And I wrote a paper on that about 7 years ago with a little bit of study about common understanding of artificial intelligence versus intelligence. And at that time, there was no general belief by the great minds that any computer could actually think. They can calculate fast and they can study and game but as far as when the rules change suddenly, I think we leave them behind. And I think that's just someplace that we have to go now and try to improve ourselves and prepare ourselves for what's coming down the line. And I don't even know that we can forcibly try to wake up more people. I think we've got to try to find people that are like ourselves and figure out where this thing is going to reorganize. And
let me just say, by the way, to Paul and Michael and Giuseppe and so forth, with whom I'm in email contact, if you send me your questions by email, I will put them to Jack and we can discuss them. Send them to me by email. There's more than one way to skin this cat. And, you know, we're handicapped because Mitchell is missing in action. And I hope to God he's okay because he's a very good man. So send the questions and we'll see what we can do with them.
Jack, send me over to host for a minute. Make me the host for a minute. I want to show something interesting.
Of course. Absolutely.
This is something that you talk about a heist. You talk about absolute theft. And, for example, am I host now?
Yeah.
Yes. All right. So I'm going to share my screen. And here it is. All right. So this is a document that was apparently produced by NPR. And it's NPR. U.S. field hospitals stand down most without treating any COVID-19 patients. And we find out here that
don't they understand what that means, that the whole thing is a hoax? Don't they understand? I mean, they're reporting on it. Can't they draw the obvious inference?
I don't know if they know that or not, but the endeavor costs more than $660 million. Almost $1 billion were thrown out the window here. And they're thrown to hospitals so that they could put up all these new facilities and throw out the regular patients, which was, like I said earlier, good for them. I mean, I remember in Houston, they tore down that $17 million hospital they built. They never had a single patient. Well, this data is as of May 7th. So we see in New York, which got the lion's share because that's where they attempted to make the biggest splash in the so-called virus. But we got SUNY Stony Brook. They got $155 million and they had reserved 1,000 beds, and they have a total of zero patients. And SUNY Old Westbury, another $118 million, 1,000 beds, zero patients. McCormick Place in Chicago, one of the only ones in this list, in fact, on this entire list that you can see here that had any patients, they got $65 million for 37 patients. So
with 3,000 beds, Jack, and they had exactly 37.
If you divide 37 into 65 million, what is that, like $3 million a bed? I don't know, but it's a lot of money. And then we just keep going. Westchester County, 46 million, no patients. Colorado, no patients, 34 million. And just a fantastic number. We see six patients here for Suburban Collection Showplace in Michigan, and they only got a paltry $11 million. But what we're witnessing here is just a fantastic heist, and that the monies that were taken out of the system and printed out of thin air are being pushed into these facilities. And part of the reason that we're being forced to stay home, you know, there's multiple agendas always with this stuff. But one of the reasons that we need to stay home is so that this money can get pushed into the system without it being spent improperly, meaning that it needs not go directly into retail spending. If it does so, it will then begin to show the exorbitant inflation that's going to come down the road. That means that the velocity of money is slower. It's lower because people aren't spending any money. They're not at restaurants, they're not at a bar buying food or drinks. They're not at Walmart for the most part. They're not at the mall, that's for sure. We see that Target and Walmart all had fantastic earnings reports. Walmart was up something like 74% year over year. I mean, these companies are criminal. They get to be called necessary while, you know, so-and-so's little
small businesses are not, yeah. Right? This has been the problem from the beginning. As David Icke explained, they're out to wipe out small businesses in the middle class and leave that's only right. The corporate giants, just as those you're identifying. We have some
fascism.
Yeah, that's right. It's a form of fascism. We have 5.7 million companies in the United States, 90% of which have 20 employees or less, where Investment Watch blog estimates 75% of those 90% could not survive a month without revenue. Not a month.
Right. So that's what's going on here. We're seeing a fantastic heist while at the same time being forced to stay home for a variety of reasons, and we're not going to be allowed to spend money. And in the meantime, the corporate pirates can't fail. You can't take a single criminal bank. You won't see Deutsche Bank fail. Involved with crime that goes back indefinitely, banks like J.P. Morgan, the crime center of the universe, Goldman Sachs, they can never fail. And so that's the hallmark of a dying civilization when the only thing that profits.
By the way, there's supposed to be a J.P. Morgan study that shows a lockdown is a calamity and that it didn't work. Right. I haven't found it yet, but I've heard it mentioned, and I meant to follow up. Would you want to take a look and see if you can find it? Because it should be pretty prominent, Jack. J.P. Morgan study, yep. Lockdown doesn't work. I'd love to get that up on here.
Right, I'll look for it for you.
Well, we have a lot of unhappy campers who would like to be calling in, and I wish that Mitchell were here to field the calls so we could do it. But as I've explained, I'm too worried that a mad painter got me connected, but he's not there. So if someone called in and I tried to handle it and we got lost, we'd be off the air and just dead for the rest of the show, meaning dead air. So I figure... Did you find it?
No, I found some interesting things about J.P. Morgan and the lockdown, but not that story. I'm going to rephrase it here.
Yeah, tell me what you have got on J.P. Morgan. Maybe I'm misremembering.
J.P. Morgan tests coronavirus preparations by asking blah. J.P. Morgan, Jamie Dimon back at work after heart surgery. Yeah, it doesn't like the fact that I put J.P. Morgan in the front. I need to put it at the end of the search, I think. Coronavirus lockdown doesn't work, and then I'm going to put J.P. Morgan. And
yeah,
basically. Yeah.
I've already reported a major study, which everyone can find at jamesfetzer.org, jamesfetzer.org. By the way, let me remind everyone, this new show of mine, The Conspiracy Guy, begins this Sunday. It's a two-hour show. The very first, it's going to be at jimtheconspiracyguy.com. That's the name of the address for the what I guess technically is a podcast, a video podcast, jimtheconspiracyguy.com. It's going to be all about coronavirus, roughly from A to Z, what all this research has shown about it, starting out, you know, who is responsible and why with the coronavirus. Very good. There you go. Lockdowns failed to alter the course of pandemic and are now destroying millions of livelihoods worldwide. JP Morgan, that's the one I wanted, Jack.
Yep. I had to use Google to find that.
Send me the link. Let's go through it. JP Morgan research said infection rates had fallen since lockdowns were eased. In other words, the lockdowns didn't help. They hurt. It suggests the virus has its own dynamics, which are unrelated to lockdowns. That's what the Israeli virologist said. Reports said they were imposed with little thought of economic devastation. Scroll a little further, Jack, and I'll read more. Coronavirus lockdowns have failed to alter the course of the pandemic, but have instead destroyed millions of livelihoods, a JP Morgan study has claimed. Falling infection rates since lockdowns were lifted suggests that the virus likely has its own dynamics, which is unrelated to often inconsistent lockdown measures, a report published by the financial services giant said. Denmark is among the countries which has seen its R rate continue to fall after school and shopping malls reopened, while Germany's rate has mostly remained below 1.0 after the lockdown was eased. The report also shows many U.S. states, including Alabama, Wisconsin, and Colorado, enjoying lower R rates after lockdown measures were lifted. Author Marco Kolvinek, a trained physicist and strategist for J.P. Morgan, said governments have been spooked by flawed scientific papers into imposing lockdowns, which were inefficient or late and had little effect. Unlike rigorous testing of new drugs, lockdowns were administered with little consideration that they might not only cause economic devastation, but potentially more deaths in COVID-19 itself, he claimed, which is utterly consistent with everything we've been reporting, Jack.
Absolutely. So it's interesting that one of their prime banks would, disclose this information, but it doesn't seem to be affecting the governors much. I mean, every governor in the vicinity of New York City, which is, you know, close to where I live, is still going on with this. You know, we've got to wear masks and social distance. And I don't think anyone can even find any evidence that anyone they know has ever had coronavirus. Now, I heard a guy today, and this is something that everybody needs to be aware of. I was listening to a local talk show on a station that I happen to work with, and it was a statewide sport or a statewide talk show. And some guy called in and said, because a few people had called in and said, I don't want to wear masks. And this guy called in and said, I used to didn't think the coronavirus is real, but me and my brother got sick, and we just thought it was a regular flu, and then we got terribly sick, and now I'm 100% for this. We got to stay into it till it's gone. Okay, so That's not scientific anything. That's just pure emotional nonsense. I've had the flu several times in my life, not many, but I've had it once at least maybe 20 years ago where it was bad. I mean, I was sick for several days, couldn't walk, the sort of thing that we all get once or twice in our life. And that's not indicating that it is the coronavirus. Yes. Or any other thing. It's the flu. It could have been.
Here's a great comment from Michael. COVID-19 facts. The virus can travel 5'11". It cannot travel 6 feet or greater. It can live on all surfaces except anything that comes in the mail from Amazon. It does not live in Target, Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, or any grocery store. It is only deadly in bars, restaurants, small businesses, hair salons, and is especially deadly in churches. It cannot live on your food as long as you get it to go. Great comments, Michael. I love them. Stay there, Jack. I want to read some more of this article because it's got, yeah, scroll down a little further below the next chart. Yeah. The JP, that was it. This means the pandemic and COVID-19 likely have their own, I read that one. Those dynamics may be influenced by increased hand washing and even weather patterns, but seem not by full-scale lockdowns, the report suggests. The fact that reopening did not change the course of the pandemic is consistent with studies showing that initiation of full lockdowns did not alter the course of the pandemic either. An Oxford University professor has previously suggested that the crisis in Britain began falling from its peak before Boris Johnson ordered a lockdown on March 23rd. Professor Carl Hennigan said last month that the peak of new cases had come on April 8th, suggesting a peak of infection 3 weeks early around March 18th. The JP Morgan analysis linked the decision to impose lockdowns to flawed scientific papers predicting millions of deaths in the West. This on its own was odd, given that in China there were only several thousand deaths and the mortality rate outside of Wuhan was very low. In the absence of conclusive data, these lockdowns were justified initially. Nevertheless, many of these efforts were inefficient or late. He ought to add, or massively destructive, which is exactly how it's turned out.
Right. Well, you know, Neil Ferguson was involved with many of these pandemics that turned out to be garbage. And I don't remember the year, but it was when he predicted foot and mouth disease was going to be killing 150,000 people. And it led to them killing, culling, as they call it, 10 million sheep and cattle, which is just an atrocity. But in that particular instance, only 200 people died. He predicted 150 million people would die in the bird flu of 2005. And in Britain, 282 people died. 2009, he said 65,000 people would die of the H1N1, and 457 people died. So all of these things, and COVID here, he said 2 million Americans would die and 200,000 British. All of these things are just plandemics, and they use priests of medical scientism like Neil Ferguson and Fauci.
Michael has sent another comment that's really point on. Good quote from the Patrick Henningsen show last Sunday interviewing David Crow. Patrick Henningsen, from your research, what are the main problems with the PCR test? Because there's a lot of weight being put on mass testing. And we'll talk about the fundamental problems with this type of approach from a society and governmental point of view and all the things that could spring from that. But first, what are the practical problems with mass testing? David Crow. The first major problem is that scientists found RNA in some people who were sick with what they thought was a new disease. At no point did they purify a virus. And without purification of a virus, we don't know that the virus exists. So we're now in an interesting situation where virtually every politician in the world, every journalist in the world, every public health official has bought into something that could be an outright delusion. Not a mistake, not a conspiracy, but a delusion. They've convinced themselves that something exists, and they haven't proven that it really does. I mean, that's pretty stunning, Jack. I think that's spot on.
Right. That's why none of those tests are accurate at all. They can't be accurate. There's no gold standard, as I said before. There's no isolated collection of proteins, which, by the way, are dead. And so they can't be alive. They're not jumping around or, you know, attempting to enter your body and do you harm. And the body's own cellular system has mechanisms to prevent foreign stuff from entering the cells unless it's done the way they plan to do it with this new vaccine. And that system of using they're going to use three needles because this is going to be a DNA type vaccine. It has to get inside the cell. And they're going to use three needles. It's called electroporation. And what it does is two of the needles produce an electric current, and the third needle dumps the garbage in your body. and electric current causes the cells to relax and open pores. And then this garbage can then go into your cells, where then it's supposed to be understood to be some sort of machinery that can be turned into a factory to create coronavirus-like particles, which then the immune system will recognize and produce antibodies for. That's just all total nonsense. I mean, it's definitely going to go into your DNA, and it's going to make you a genetically modified organism. But the rest of that stuff's just crap. And I'm guessing that just so many people are going to die right on the spot, or they're going to go home a week later. They're going to be paralyzed. I mean, remember with that swine flu of the 1976, some 14,000 people got that shot right away and became paralyzed, many of them forever, but some of them lasted a year or more. Guillain-Barré, or Barré, however you say that. So, you know, this is just something you're playing with humanity. I mean, I heard Gates talk about 1% of the total population maybe might die. That's 70 million people. That's 70 million people that were never going to get coronavirus. So obviously this is a psychopath's attempt to take over the world with his little scientific invention. And another thing that I wanted to bring up, unless you're going to jump here, is that there's a lot of players in this game that have been outed as phony. And, you know, like, for example, Mike Adams, and I've never seen anything quite like him. I'm thinking that he would be a candidate for arrest with the sort of nonsense he's been writing about the coronavirus since the beginning. I remember the very day where he said that this was back in early March, where he said that he predicted using his own mathematics from his own laboratory that by May 8th, every hospital room in the United States would be full of coronavirus, and that the number of deaths would be astronomical. And then over the course of this thing, he never stops. Even in the evidence that we see here, he re-echoed that story that was fakely created by Sky News, that was saying that Mexico City was experiencing this horrendous number of deaths, and that the crematoriums were running around the clock and black smoke was coming out of them. And Jeff Burke, I can't think of his name. I have to look him up here. But he runs the Dollar Vigilante. He took the time to actually go to Mexico City because he lives in Acapulco. And what he said, I mean, he drove around and he went to crematorium after crematorium. They're all closed. He went to all the hospitals, the same as they are in the U.S. Nobody's there. He talked to these people that are in the hospital parking lots. There's nobody here. He went to a funeral home and asked the funeral home director, are you selling any more, are you burying more people? Are you selling coffins? And he laughed. He says, there's nobody dying. He went to one crematorium that was in operation, and they told him that it was just the minimal stuff. So all that story is nonsense. And these people, Mike Adams and Alex Jones for other reasons, and Joe Rogan, I mean, they're all playing a middle ground game. They're some sort of COINTELPRO. And then you have the people like Dr. Shiva that show up out of the middle of nowhere running for Senate. And then you find out he owns vaccine companies. And Judy Mikovits is someone that I believe is controlled opposition, because she told whopper lies in her pandemic movie. She talked about she was on the team that isolated HIV. And that HIV has been debunked. It's never been isolated. It's not considered the cause of AIDS. It was just a manufactured bunch of crap to produce a vaccine that harmed a lot of people. She also said something like she taught the Ebola virus how to infect people. Well, what most bothers me is that she thinks that vaccine technology works, but she works to develop vaccines. So she gets paid by that industry. So I find her connected mainly with the Trump administration and part of controlled opposition.
Jack, without endorsing what you just said, here's a comment from Paul, who, of course, is frequently on the show. Tell Jack, I heard him today on the Power Hour, and he was great. Tell him he should mention Stefan Lanka and his great work, especially Pandemic Theater, the history of the infection theory and how it is so accurate about what is going on today. Would you like to comment?
You see, because I talked about that on the Power Hour today. Lankin, you know, he's a hero, and he's another physician virologist who has gone and and stepped up and studied virology and then thrown it away. I have some of his work here on the screen. He wrote a book called Vaccination, Genocide in the Third Millennium. And he has said things similar. So for a long time, I studied virology from the end to the beginning, from the beginning to the end, to be absolutely sure that there was no such thing as HIV. And it was easy for me to be sure about this because I realized that the whole group of viruses to which HIV is said to belong, the retroviruses, as well as other viruses which are claimed to be very dangerous, in fact, do not exist at all. And so he made a claim in Germany that he would pay 100,000 euros to anyone who could show him a measles virus. That would mean that they would have to be isolated and purified, and then using Koch's procedures, verified that it actually caused measles. And at which time, if someone was able to do so, he would pay 100,000 euros. Well, someone attempted to take him up on that, and it was somebody from the inside, and in the lower, and I don't know, I can't say the words of what happened in the courtroom, but the lower court, they ruled against Lanka, and they said that he had to pay these people 100,000 euros, and of course he believed that he was being robbed, so he took it to the Supreme Court, and I have that article here somewhere, and the Supreme Court vindicated him, and he was not required to pay any costs. In fact, the other people were required to pay court costs. But there's a little sentence here. For almost 1 year, we've been asking authorities, politicians, medical institutes, after the scientific evidence for the existence of such viruses that are said to cause disease and therefore require immunization. After almost 1 year, we have not received even one concrete answer which provides evidence for the existence of those vaccination viruses. The conclusion is inevitable that our children are still vaccinated on the basis of scientific standards of the 18th and 19th century. In the 19th century, Robert Koch demanded in his generally accepted postulates evidence of the virus in order to prove infection. At Koch's time, this evidence couldn't be achieved by directly visualizing and characterizing of the viruses because adequate technology wasn't available. Methods of modern medicine have profoundly changed over the past 60 years, in particular the invention of the electron microscope. And still, all these viruses we get immunized against have never been reexamined using this technology. And this is the thing. I bought a book called Virus Mania, written by a couple of guys from Europe. And I really can't say their names perfectly, but it also comes with an endorsement from Robert F. Kennedy on the front of it. Klaus Kahnlein and Torsten Engelbrecht. But I'm telling you, if you want an eye-opening experience, and if you read the comments of people who wrote about this book, it's astounding. This Wolfgang Wolfen, MD, professor of microbiology and infectious epidemiology, says this book has been written with the care of a master craftsman, courageously evaluating the medical establishment, the corporate elites, and the powerful government funding institutions. It's the result of expert knowledge and a great attention to details. I edit standard medical textbooks, so I esteem the decades of efforts required to research and write a book like this. Just the first two chapters will blow you away. I mean, the entire medical system that our health resides on is just pure evil. I mean, and all the people in the hospitals and the nurses, that's not their fault. I mean, they were taught this in school. They looked up to these experts. They believe this stuff is whatever it is. They don't know. They can't see it. And, you know, when you start asking questions like the author of the book, What Really Makes You Ill, like, why are all the people that go in for cancer treatment dying? Why are people who don't take cancer treatment surviving more often? And the answer is clear. I mean, chemotherapy is just a lucrative endeavor for hospitals and doctors, and it kills 95% of the people that use it. And so I urge anyone who's experiencing or facing cancer to start with these kinds of books and check out Dr. Brzezinski's clinic in Houston, Texas. It's BrzezinskiClinic.com. I mean, it's not medical advice. It's just my opinion. I met the man. I saw his research. I saw the photos of the people he's cured and heard the testimony from written testimony that he repeated. And I just think it's fantastic that today we are stuck in a world like this. I think this is a good time in history. I think now is the time that we can break free of the chains, even of the idea of government. These are all systems to protect the elite from the people. It's a superstition. There's no need for governments. Everything that we need can self-organize, and a free market fixes all problems intrinsically. Sure. That's why the Rockefellers so vehemently hate free competition, and that's why they build monopolies everywhere they go, because they can't survive in a world of competition.
Michael has sent me another article from Bobby Jr. Vaccine trial catastrophe. Modern vaccine have 20% serious injury rate in high dose group. Get this. Despite Moderna's cheery press release this week, they're working on a cure. The clinical trial result for its groundbreaking COVID vaccine could not be much worse. The vaccine, developed and championed by Anthony Fauci and financed by Bill Gates, using experimental mRNA technology that the two men hope would allow rapid deployment to meet President Trump's ambitious warp speed timeline. Dr. Fauci was so confident of his shot safety that he waived ferret and primate studies. Moderna suspiciously reported no specific health data from its mouse studies. That appears to have been a mistake. 3 of the 15 human guinea pigs in the high-dose cohort suffered a serious adverse effect within 43 days of receiving Moderna's jab. Moderna did not release its clinical trial study or raw data, but its press release, which was freighted with inconsistencies, acknowledged that 3 volunteers developed grade 3 systemic events defined by the FDA as preventing daily activity and requiring medical intervention. They may have been paralyzed. Moderna allowed only exceptionally healthy volunteers to participate in the study. A vaccine with those reaction rates could cause grave injuries in 1.5 billion human beings if administered to every person on Earth. That is the threshold that Gates has established for ending the global lockdown. The man is a monster. He's just a cretin. He's one of the greatest mass murderers in history. He's right up there with Pot Powell and Mao Zedong and Joseph Stalin. I mean, it's stunning, Jack. It's just disgusting beyond words.
Yep, I couldn't agree more. You know, it was Louis Pasteur that never vaccinated a single animal that lived. You know, and the way that they determined things like a virus existed and harmed and killed people like polio was they would take fluid out of a sick person and then drill holes in monkeys' brains and mix that fluid with some other stuff and put it in the brains.
God.
And then if the monkey got symptoms of something, they called it polio. But most of the time he died. They said that they killed during the vaccination period, and I think it was polio, they killed 17,000 animals. But over the course of the whole 1800s, it was in the hundreds of thousands of animals that they killed trying to come up with some way to create a vaccine. I mean, this is not something that just happened yesterday. This has been the scourge of humanity for 200 or more years.
Jack, I got to say, you've been doing a terrific job getting out there, right there on the front line, spreading the truth as you know it. I do think that Mike Adams might be coming around. I do think he was in the early stages, quite the alarmist. I agree with your criticism, which frankly floored me as well. Judy Mikovits looks to me like she's a champion for truth, but I'm fascinated by your criticism. We don't want to take anything for granted. Meanwhile, I want to thank you for coming on the show tonight on short notice, and you have done a masterful job in spite of the fact that we were lacking a producer. We couldn't take normal calls. I want to thank Michael out there for being so responsive and sending us several very worthwhile items. And Paul, for your tweet out to Jack, I'm very glad you heard him on the Power Hour. That's very good.
Yeah, thank you, Paul.
Yeah, thank Jack. You. So let me just say, I think you're doing a great job. I'm delighted to have had you on tonight. And thanks to Michael. Thanks to Paul. Thanks to everyone else. Thanks to Bruce and others who volunteered to let their phones be somehow an intermediary, which I couldn't quite sort out. We never got there. But on Sunday, I'll be glad to take any residual questions any of you have, where we'll be pursuing these and other issues, probably more on terms of the politics of the COVID crisis than the science, which was our focus tonight. Jack, you did a simply terrific job, my friend.
Well, thank you, sir. And of course, I'm always honored to be on anything that you're involved with. And I love your work. I think you're a great American hero. I appreciate the kind words of your email and call. And I want to remind people that you can find my stuff at thegovernmentrag.com.
Thegovernmentrag.com. Jack, so thank you. That's me.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio.
Oscar's freeze. That's your cerebral cortex looking for an answer it doesn't have.
See? Even your brain knows you're screwed.
The pad is filling with adrenaline right now. Whether you know it or not, your heart's beating fast. It's getting a little harder to breathe. Neurobiological system is telling it to run, but your knees are too weak to move.
Fear is not real. The only place that fear can exist is in our thoughts of the future. It is a product of our imagination, causing us to fear things that do not at present and may not ever exist. That is near insanity. Do not misunderstand me. Danger is very real, but fear is a choice. We are all telling ourselves a story.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. 100% listener-supported radio. Reporting the danger. Unafraid. Right here, where information never sleeps. Revolution. Revolution. Radio.
Hi everybody, it's me, the Fetch, host of Inside the Eye Live. Before the Sunday mainstream media political pundit talk shows, there is Inside the Eye Live, where we break down some of the weekly mainstream media talking points before the talking points even get aired. Add in some entertaining stories, weather, cats, intriguing and informative guests, and you get